Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
In just over 40 days, on September 1st, primary voters here in Massachusetts will go to the polls or mail in their ballots. And in a little over 100 days, the nation will decide if President Trump deserves a second term or if Joe Biden will be president. Here's President Trump speaking on Sunday to Fox News' Chris Wallace about the election.
The enthusiasm for Trump is through the roof.
I have mentioned it.
Even higher than last time. The enthusiasm for Biden is non-existent. Everyone knows he's
shot. But the enthusiasm against you is
high. Well, that's okay. That's his only shot. I mean, that's his only shot. I agree. And those people know I'm doing a good job, but there's something in my personality that they don't like. Because, look, nobody's done what I've done.
So joining us now to give us a snapshot of the stakes for New England in this election season is WBUR senior political reporter Anthony Brooks. He's just back from West Brookfield, Massachusetts, where he's been speaking to 2016 Trump voters. Anthony, welcome back.
Hi, Tatiana. Good to be back.
And also joining us on the line from Washington is Kimberly Atkins, until last week, WBUR senior news correspondent in D.C. She's now senior editorial writer at the Boston Globe. Kimberly, happy to have you back on the show in your new role.
Good to talk to you, Tiziana.
So, Anthony, let's start with you. We just heard the president claiming that he's got enthusiasm on his side. And at the same time, we have national polls, some showing Biden leading by up to double digits. It seems like we have two Americas right now. You've been out talking to people in the western half of the state. Do we have two states here in Massachusetts about this presidential election as well?
Well, I mean, I think the divisions that are so apparent across the country are also apparent here in Massachusetts. It's important to remember that out of 3 million votes cast in 2016, 1 million of them in Massachusetts were for Donald Trump. So back in 2016, we spent some time in those so-called red towns that stretch across central Mass from the New Hampshire border down to the Connecticut line, and we're revisiting them now. And sure, you find some of the same divisions because the state is different out there than it is in greater Boston. It's more rural. People embrace gun rights. The mills that once provided all kinds of manufacturing jobs are shut down. So this was ripe for Trump's message back in 2016. So we're taking a listen, if you will, to find out what people are saying now.
Kimberly, you heard me refer to some of the national polling. That is a snapshot in time. And I got to go back and remind us all that in the summer of 2016, Hillary Clinton was polling well ahead of Donald Trump as well. You've heard the president call them fake polls, fake news. How reliable are the numbers this year? Have we figured the polls out in a way we didn't, especially given that we're doing all this in the middle of a pandemic and a weird frozen campaign schedule?
Yeah, I don't think we yet know the answer to that question. One way to look at polling is to pay less attention to the snapshots and more attention to the momentum. And when you look at polls over time, over the course of this election, it has shown a clear decline in momentum for President Trump. He's the incumbent. This is looking more like a referendum about his performance. This race is also very different than in 2016. You had two candidates, neither the incumbent, but that both people had made up their minds about, and that both had a lot of negative opinion too. With this, with Joe Biden, you don't have the same thing. And frankly, this election is all about Donald Trump at this point. And so the fact that his numbers are dropping, have been dropping over time, spells trouble for his campaign.
You know, it's interesting, Tiziana, listening to that Chris Wallace moment with Donald Trump. They're both right. I mean, Donald Trump is right. The poll suggests that his supporters are more enthusiastic for him than voters are for Joe Biden. But Chris Wallace is right, and that is there's a huge amount of enthusiasm to vote against Donald Trump. And I found evidence of that in Western Massachusetts just today. I talked to a Democrat who's actually running for office, and when I asked him to make a case for Joe Biden, he laughed. But when I asked him, are you going to vote against Donald Trump, he said, absolutely. And that's why Democrats are energized in this part of the state in a way that they weren't in 2016. So both are true in this case.
So let's talk about the Veep stakes, or you know, the big looming question about who Joe Biden is going to pick as his running mate. There's been pressure for him to pick a woman of color. Biden says four women of color on his short list. There's also a lot of conversation about Tammy Duckworth now ascending on that short list. But we are hearing reports here in the Commonwealth that Senator Elizabeth Warren seems to still be getting buzz as someone high on his list. Kimberly, what do we know about that? That's honestly, that seems surprising.
Yeah, I mean, look, we don't know a ton about deliberations within the campaign, but one thing that we do know, and one thing that might make this seem less surprising, is that polling has consistently shown that Elizabeth Warren performs well among Democrats, including people of color. There's this idea that Joe Biden must choose a woman of color in this moment, given the reckoning over race, but polling numbers don't necessarily bear that out. Also, Joe Biden has promised to pick a woman. The woman who performed the best in the presidential primary was Elizabeth Warren. So it seems it seems that would be a big point in her favor as well. But keep in mind, too, that this election, while I always say that voters don't care as much about the vice presidential pick on a ticket, but what this will do for Joe Biden is really tee up the front runner in the next after whether he loses or whether he wins beyond that, the next Democratic front runner in the following presidential election will give them a big boost. So in that case, I'm sure they're moving very carefully. And that's one reason that you've seen Elizabeth Warren be very visible. She's clearly still in this race, but as are other really talented people like Senator Duckworth, like Senator Kamala Harris, and they're all duking this out. We'll know by next month.
Anthony, I'm going to ask you a big old bundle of a question about New Hampshire. The president was supposed to do a rally there, postponed it due to a rainstorm that then wouldn't have affected the rally. But that was on the heels of a rally that did not turn out well in Tulsa, Oklahoma, especially in terms of turnout. But he also restarted his coronavirus task force briefings today, which some pundits had said kind of served the purpose of a rally for him when he couldn't. Is New Hampshire in play, and will the president have to come up with different ways to woo voters in states that are in play if these big rallies are a non-starter due to the pandemic?
Well, in terms of New Hampshire being in play, it's pretty much historically, I mean, in recent two or three, four cycles, it's been in play. The latest polls probably give Joe Biden an advantage here. But yeah, it's in play, which is why Donald Trump wanted to come up and do a rally here. In terms of restarting the briefings and his frustration around these big rallies, yeah, this is a tough business for Donald Trump because he derives a lot of power, you could say. He gets a lot of oxygen from those big rallies. It's where he's most comfortable. It's where he can rev up his base. So the less than huge attendance in Tulsa, the cancellation of the rally in New Hampshire, these are all disappointing for him. Now, the idea about restarting these daily briefings on the coronavirus, it's a huge risk because they didn't go so well for him before, which is why they stopped it, because he wasn't very good at staying on message and he was, you know, saying things that weren't proven and highly controversial. And that's when that contributed to some of the softening of the polls. So it will be interesting to see if he can turn that around and use those briefings as a way to connect with his base and rev up support. He hasn't been able to do it to date, but that's what they're hoping he will do going forward.
Okay, so surprisingly, almost shockingly, September 1st is right around the corner. That is primary day for local races. So let's change our focus a little bit. I want to start with the primary and the race for the Senate seat that's held by Senator Ed Markey. He's being challenged by Congressman Joe Kennedy. We also have a second race. This is the House seat in Western Massachusetts, held by Congressman Richard Neal, who currently is the chair of the House Ways and Means Committee. He's being challenged by Holyoke Mayor Alex Morse. Can either of you give me a read of the tea leaves on those two races? What are you watching for? What's important? Are there potential for upsets here?
Well, look,
what do you think,
the
Kimberly,
Western
you
Mass.
Go first.
Okay, thank you. The Western Mass race is interesting because it's a microcosmic example of what's happening across the country. You are seeing more establishment Democrats, particularly those who hold chairmanships, being challenged by progressives who don't believe that the party is moving quickly enough and wielding its power in the right way. You saw longtime Congressman Elliot Engel of New York be ousted in a primary challenge, and that's certainly what Holyoke Mayor Alex Morse is seeking to do. On the other hand, Chairman Neal is chairman of the Ways and Means Committee. It's one of the most powerful committees in Washington. So I'm watching that closely. I'm making no predictions, but that is a clear example right here in Massachusetts of a really broader thing. The Senate race is entirely different. You have somebody who is fairly popular in Senator Ed Markey, author of the Green New Deal, and you have a challenger who is not coming from his left, but who is a popular congressman, a Kennedy, and looking to move up. Both of them are trying to make the case as to why Markey deserves to stay or why Kennedy deserves the seat. I talked to folks who are question whether either one of them is making that case. So I think at this point, that's a toss up. But it's a very rare and very different race that's being playing out there.
Yeah, I
Anthony,
agree with Kim.
Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead. I was just going to say quickly that I completely agree with Kimberly. Two very, very different races. I think what Kennedy is trying to do here is sort of present himself as the sort of new generation. I mean, you know, Markey is 73. He's been representing Massachusetts and Washington since before Kennedy was born. Kennedy's 39. So there is a sense that people know that the Democratic Party has failed to renew itself over the years. And Kennedy, I mean, this is what you can say about Kennedy. He looks like the future a lot of folks have been dreaming of, and his name is Kennedy. That said, there isn't one iota of difference between the two on policy. So that's what makes this a really sort of difficult race for Massachusetts Democrats to assess.
Okay, we've got a couple of minutes left before we have to go to a break, and I don't want to miss Maine, because we've got Maine Senator Susan Collins, New England's last remaining Republican member of Congress, who is facing off this November against Sarah Gideon, who is the Speaker of the Maine House of Representatives. A lot of outside money coming into that race. It's a key battleground for the U.S. Senate. What do you make of that race, and what should we be watching for, Kimberly?
Yeah, that race is looking like bad news for Senator Collins. The fundraising against the nationwide fundraising against Susan Collins began the day she took her vote in favor of Brett Kavanaugh to be confirmed to the U.S. Supreme Court. That race has really galvanized Democrats against her in a really, really specific way, to the point that I was actually a little surprised that she would run for re-election. It would be such an uphill climb. This too is a referendum against the incumbent, and recent poll, there's not been a ton of polling, but the polling that has been done is not looking good for her. So I think this might be one of a handful of opportunities Democrats have in these Senate races to flip a seat.
And Anthony, if Susan Collins loses, is this the end of an era, the death of a species, the New England Republican in Washington?
Well, I mean, in fact, it would be, because she's the last Republican Washington office holder in New England. But, you know, I would sort of challenge this idea that Susan Collins represents this sort of this New England sort of moderate species of senator, because she's been pretty in line with Donald Trump. And a lot of her votes over the years have also been pretty in line with conservative orthodoxy. She's done well by dealing directly with Maine voters and making them feel that she's really connected to their issues. But in terms of national issues, the idea that she's somehow a moderate who sort of goes her own way, I mean, it is true that she voted in to save the Affordable Care Act, and that was a key vote, and it won her a lot of support among liberals and Democrats in Maine. But the Brett Kavanaugh vote, and don't forget, she voted against impeaching Donald Trump and said that the reason she's doing that is because she believes Donald Trump has learned his lesson. And there's very little evidence of that. So in terms of her being, you know, the last of a dying breed of moderate senator, I'm not convinced of that.
All right. Well, as the pace quickens towards Election Day, we'll look forward to talking to you both some more. That's Anthony Brooks, WBUR senior political reporter. Anthony, thank you.
My pleasure, Tiziana.
And Kimberly Atkins in Washington. She is senior editorial writer at the Boston Globe. Kimberly, thanks.
Thank you so much.